Hi everyone, welcome back to the second episode of UCC's Talking Pictures podcast. I hope all of you are doing really well. Thanks for all the support and comments that I got last week. It was really fun to see. So today I am really excited to announce my first guest for the podcast, which is Jennifer Barry. So Jennifer is best known for her role in The Young Offenders, Girls and Dolls and Every 5 Miles. And she's finally announced some very exciting news in the past week, which we'll get into today. So let's move on to Jennifer. Jennifer, thanks for being on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Thanks so much for having me, Shannon. I'm really excited. I don't get asked to come on because I'm working here in the radio station now. So I like very rarely get to go on and talk. So it's nice. Thanks for having me and for asking me to come on. I'm honoured.
Thank you so much. I'm absolutely over the moon to have you, which I'd say you know and everyone else has known because I've been constantly talking about it for the past week. But we won't focus on me today. So Jennifer, you're obviously known for your acting. How did you get into it?
Yeah, I suppose I always wanted to be an actor. I think from the age of like 5 or 6, there was just something about performing. I don't think I knew as such that acting was an actual job. I just knew that being on the stage and, yeah, just making, entertaining was something I loved to do. And I loved to make people laugh in school and stuff. And then I think it was really from, I actually know the exact moment that I realised you could do it as a job was when I was in 5th class, I'm going to say. Yeah, it was 4th or 5th class. We went to see the Everyman Panto with my school and they performed Revolting Children from Matilda the musical at the very end. And I just remember, like, uncontrollably like crying, and I just couldn't figure out why I was crying so much, but there was just something about that moment of seeing that action on stage that really, it was like I found my calling. It was a really weird experience where I was crying, but I was just crying because I was so emotionally attached to what was happening in the story that was being told. So I suppose that was really when I knew that I wanted to be an actor. And I suppose I did drama classes for speech and drama classes for years in primary school, as we kind of all do at some stage. We did lots of, every year we'd do a Christmas play and I loved those. And I did lots of speech and drama classes, as I said, and did all my exams and stuff like that. And of course I did Fesh Matthew here in Cork, which was horrific. I hate competing in acting. It's like every day when you audition, you're competing. But like this was just terrifying. But I did all that and then... Yeah, I kind of just, I got to secondary school, I really kind of went back into myself. I didn't think acting was something that I could do full time as a job, especially because in school you're so academically pushed. All the other things are kind of left behind. And I think in the school I went to, it was really sport focused. There wasn't a lot there for the creative side of people. So I found it really hard to find a balance and to try kind of maneuver my way through school, all the time longing to become an actor, but not knowing how to go about it and not really having any kind of form of support. But then my old drama teacher, Pam, I met with her and I said, I want to be an actor. I want to do this. And she said, OK, I'll help you get there. And Pam pushed me so hard. She really saw the best in me and brought that out of me, especially in my performances and stuff. So I was with her for a year, and then when I was 16, I saw on Facebook that, on a Joe.ie article, that the Young Offenders was a new Cork TV show and they were looking for people for the new TV series. Now, that came out in April, and then I'd only actually first watched the film in March. I will not tell a lie. I only saw it in March for the first time.
So you're one of those people. Those people are like, oh my God, I loved it so much. I'm such a
fan. Yeah, I only did. I did. Hey now, I did love it. I did love the film. I really enjoyed it. But I was late to the watch party. I was very, very late to the watch party. I was a year behind. So less of it. No, but I did watch it and I really, really loved it. Then I saw that and I said, you know what? I have the accent. I have nothing to lose. I might as well just do this. And I remember so well just sitting in my room for like an hour writing this, making up a script in my head. And the people of Cork have such a particular way about them and such a particular demeanor, and especially the way they behave is just really individual and specific compared to the rest of Ireland. So I really wanted to focus on that. So I wrote the script in my room on a piece of paper, and then it took me about 30 minutes to actually realise how to print my email backwards for the video. but then I submitted it, heard nothing back for about a month, I would say. And I was actually, like, I think it was, like, the same day I said to my mom, I was like, I'm just going to delete this. I can't. Like, this is so embarrassing. They didn't get back to me. Oh, my God, I'm useless. You know, all the things you think of when you're an actor and you don't get a role. Useless, not worth it, et cetera, et cetera. So then I was in Super Valley with my mom and I got a call from a random number and I answered it. And he said, hi, this is Mike here. I'm the casting director for Young Offenders. And straight away, I started jumping up and down the place. And he said, he was just like, yeah, like, we'd like you to come in and audition. And I remember, like, knocking over, like, this huge thing, like, this huge display in Super Valley. It was so embarrassing. But I was just so excited, the fact that someone in the industry had recognised me and said, we think you're good, come in. And that was a huge thing for me. So I was away on holidays at the time of the audition. So I had a Skype audition with Peter Foote, the director, and his assistant, Trish. And then, yeah, they called me back and they said that we want you to come in for to meet the lads and to run through some different scenarios with the lads. So I said, yeah, of course. So then I met Chris and Alex in Griffith College. It was a very sunny, very warm day. And I did it with another girl. And again, it was just very much improv. It was seeing how we connect, how we bounce off each other. And Peter stopped us halfway, like in the middle of it, and was like, okay, thanks very much for coming in. We'll let you know. And I was just like, oh, I didn't get it. I didn't get it. Oh, no. Yeah. And I was so disheartened. But I went to the bathroom. When I came out, Mike was there, the casting director. And he was like, oh, look, Jennifer, we just want to grab your details just in case, you know, anything comes up in the future for you. I was like, yeah, go on, sure, look, another mailing list to be added to. And they brought me into the room and all the cast were there. And I never really copped why. It didn't occur to me why they'd all be there. And then Martina Nyland, who was the producer for the movie, was there as well. And she was the producer for the first series. And she was filming and recording, but again, I didn't cop it. And Peter turned to me and said, how do you think you did? And I was like, I literally said to him, I was like, well, you're the director, so, like, you tell me. And he was like, no, I think you did really well. And, yeah, congratulations. We'd like to offer you the role of Siobhan. Yeah. And I actually, the first thing I said to him was, fuck off. Like, that was my initial response was literally, like, fuck off. And I just fell to the floor. It was so dramatic, like, so unnecessarily dramatic. But I fell to the floor and I was just, I can't explain the feeling. It was just incredible. And I suppose that's really how the journey started for me. I was 16. I was really young. But that's how it kind of all took off, I suppose.
That's amazing.
And it's a one in a lifetime story, I think. I don't think I've met anyone else who's had that story. So it's nice to kind of have ownership of that and relive it whenever I tell it. It's, again, like, I already have that feeling in my chest and my stomach of just like, what? Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
It's like something from a movie. Like, this doesn't happen to people. Like, how does it feel like it happened to you? This being based on, I think, it has been one of the biggest TV shows in Ireland in years. It's broadcasted internationally. And you coming from, I suppose, no professional background, though you've done really extensive training, just to suddenly be a main character in that show. Like, how did that feel?
Yeah, like, the whole time I just couldn't figure out where the catch was. I mean, I'm from a tiny village in West Cork. There's no kind of creative and performing, there's no artistic background to the place. It's a very GAA village, which is fine. You know, I play camogie myself, like, I'm a proud sub. But yeah, it was just so weird. It was just crazy. I still can't wrap my head around it. I don't think I ever will wrap my head around that particular time in my life, because it was just so phenomenal. And I suppose the one person I did kind of have to look towards was Graham Norton, because Graham Norton went to the same school as me. So, and he was from Bantry, you know, which isn't that far away from me. And seeing how well he did was inspiring for me. That's the closest thing I could probably relate it to. But other than that, no, I don't know how it feels, because every day I wake up and I remember it happened to me. And it's something that just can't be put into words, because it was just so incredible.
That's actually, it's insane listening to it as well. Like, you've such a way for telling a story. Like, I felt like I was in the room right there. You were speaking of, you were from a village that you felt kind of leaned more towards sport. Do you feel like this is kind of a thing that happens a lot in Ireland, where there's a lot more emphasis on, say, GAA over arts, and perhaps maybe that's not why as many people pursue things like acting and music as much until they enter college or kind of move away from more rural areas?
Yeah, definitely. I think the opportunities aren't there for young people, especially in the artistic industry, like in the arts. But one thing I have definitely noticed now is since COVID, since the pandemic, there's a lot more focus being put on it, which is amazing. Now, it's very much focused on the Irish professional industry. I think that the support that's there for actors, especially in rural areas, isn't a lot. There's local theatre groups and there's, you know, amateur drama groups, and that's all amazing. But there needs to be more support and more funding for them and more opportunities, because the amount of talent we have in this country is indescribable. Mm-hmm. The amount of people that can perform and that can tell stories. It's in our blood, I think. I truly believe Irish people have been known for forever for being able to tell stories and being incredible poets and, you know, Shano singing, everything like that, trad music. It all comes from us and it all comes from our roots. And I think when that's ignored and neglected, it's a really harmful thing. And I think that's what happened from like kind of like the sick from the 1900s onwards, like I think after the War of Independence especially, it kind of just turned away from all that and really focused on sport. So that's difficult. It is difficult, but thankfully it's taking a bit of a turn now and there's more focus on it, which is really reassuring for young actors and young people wanting to get into the industry.
It's actually really funny you mentioned about the amount of talent, because like, I mean, you know yourself, the Oscars is coming up. I'd say you know better than most people. We've had 14 nominations this year and 5 of them are in the acting categories, which proportionally with their population, I don't think there's ever been anything like it. Like,
no, never. And it's this, I think that's a great thing as well that's happened to us, is that it's not only that the people of Ireland are now turning to the arts and focusing on it, but people around the world are finally starting to recognise that the Irish are here. We may be a small country, but we have so much talent. And like, you can see it, the evidence is there. We have 5 acting nominations in the Oscars.
That's insane.
The 97th Oscars.
It's actually,
I think it's the 97th Oscars.
Yeah, I think it's around that.
Pretty sure it is. It's something around the 90s anyway.
Yeah, we'll leave it.
It's something around the 90s. But yeah, it's just, it's so incredible. And I think it's really important to remember that they all started off the way we did. And they started in the same boat as we did. And look how far they've come. It can take a while. It doesn't happen overnight, really. Mm-hmm. Unless you're LA.
Yeah.
And when you're in Ireland, it can take time. And it's really important to remember that it's a process and a journey and not just something that happens with the click of a finger. But yeah, the Oscar nominations are just incredible. I will, if we're a fact, be watching and drinking pints whilst it's happening. I think it should be a national holiday, personally.
Oh, it should be. Like, especially this year.
Yeah, like, it's so close to Paddy's Day and loads, like pretty much 90% of the Irish population have been nominated, so it would be rude not to.
I know, like, this needs a petition. Like, I don't know what's going on in the government at the moment,
oh my god, don't even. We won't even say the G word.
Anyway, guys, we're going to turn to political politics. Yeah. No, I'm joking. Yeah, it's actually really funny that you mentioned that, like, they started in the same boat, because, like, I suppose if you look in America and the UK, a lot of actors come from wealthy backgrounds, and most, there's like, just for anyone listening, there's kind of like this little joke. If you look up any like British actor and you check their Wikipedia page, you check if their parents' names are in blue, because that basically lets you know, okay, they have money. That's a big reason why they're into this. But then this year's nominees, we have Brendan Gleeson. I think he was a teacher until he was about 30, and then he started acting. And just all of them come from very normal backgrounds. But then if you go to somewhere like England or America, so much of it is rooted in kind of wealth and nepotism. Like, do you feel there's a similar issue in Ireland where money is a big factor and how far you get and what opportunities you get?
Yeah, I think it's something that happens not just in acting, but in every profession. I think the whole conversation around nepotism is so prominent at the moment because everyone feels like they have something to say. And especially when someone is successful, they like to find the reason why. They don't just say, well, they're successful. They say they're successful because. Mm-hmm. So I think in Ireland it is different. I really do think, I do believe so. I think, because especially very few actors come from a background of a creative family. Very few actors do. So a lot of them nowadays do, but beforehand it wasn't the case. You know, people weren't actors and people weren't creatives professionally. Mm-hmm. They may have done it on the side, but they were never
encouraged
to pursue it as a career. So I think now it's starting to happen a little bit more where, yes, I would say that many people who do, especially go to drama school, are very lucky, and they've been raised comfortably. Mm-hmm. Like I myself have been, I've been really lucky. I have a really, really great family, but we were comfortable, you know?
Yeah.
But it's amazing to see people like Barry Keoghan come forward, especially when he had such a tough life and he actually loves this and he's so naturally talented. There are so many people like that as well. And that's why it's such a pity that there's not more focus put on it, because there's so, like I said, there's so much talent in the country that isn't being sought after because there isn't the financial stability, there isn't financial opportunities for these people. There's no way for them to get out of what they've been guided to do. But yeah, overall, I think every Irish actor at some stage is just a normal person.
Have you ever had like any specific fan experience that you might have remembered, or have they all just been very chill?
I have a couple of memories from nights out, but one that really sticks out to me was when it first came out and I was just 17.
Yeah,
it was the April after it came out, and I went to the Borgosh Energy Theatre to see Matilda. Of course.
Actually, have you seen the film just before?
Oh, yeah.
So good, isn't it?
So good. I saw it actually as part of the Cork Film Festival.
And she was premiere. There.
And she was there, yeah. And I like tried to act all through. I was like, okay, I'm just not going to look at her, whatever. But like, I was actually really freaking out. She's so small. She's so tiny. She's amazing. Amazing, Alicia Weir. But I would say it was when I was up in Dublin seeing Matilda in April after Young Offenders had originally come out. And it was all secondary school students. So all people my age and younger. And the staff members had to help me leave because I couldn't move out of a corner.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was totally swamped.
Oh, my God.
Totally, totally swamped. And that was a really overwhelming. Like, that was like, and no, like, everyone I went up with could not believe it was happening. They were like, what? Like, what the hell? But, yeah, it was, that was, like, the first time it really was overwhelming. I think the second time was when I was a guest at Graham Norton's quiz in Ahagista, and I got to stand next to him and talk to him, and it was just so amazing. It was crazy, but it was amazing to see that people wanted photographs with me as well as Graham Norton, who was like a literal god to me. And just being recognised next to someone as with such high regard as him was just another crazy thing. Mm-hmm. And every night out, I think as well, you get like people coming up when you're drunk and like, it's fine. It's, you know, they're all a bit of fun. And like sometimes you do have really deep conversations with people, and I love that. I love getting deep and personal. I really don't do the light chat.
No.
I'm like, tell me your secrets. No, you know I'm not. But, you know.
Like for an autograph.
Yeah.
Tell me everything.
Tell me two traumatic things that happened to you in your childhood past.
If you email Jen for your deepest, darkest secrets, she'll talk to you.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'll bring you coffee if you email them to me. But, yeah, I think those were the few things that I've remembered up to now. And just, it happens every day, but you get used to it very quickly, I think.
And after like the first initial kind of crowd swamping thing, like did you have like any initial feeling like, oh, okay, this is what I've signed up for? Like, were you kind of nervous about it at all, or did it fade away quickly?
I think Peter did say to us when we got it, he was like, you know, now your lives are going to change forever. Like, things are never going to be the same for you again. And that was really true. So we did see it coming. We knew something was going to happen. We knew something was going to change. We just didn't know what. But everything has changed.
Mm-hmm.
And when that initial swamping, we'll call it, happened, yeah, there was definitely a sense of, wow, I'm not even in Cork. And all these people are coming up to me. And I think the craziest thing is when I met a family in an airport in France.
In France.
I was on school.
International.
Not international, I would say. I was on a school holiday with my friends. Yeah. Not a school. I was on like a school trip with some of my friends, and this family stopped me in the airport, and they were French. They were Irish living in France. And I think that's really when I realised, like, wow, okay, this is kind of big now.
Yeah.
And especially seeing all the posters like all over London and stuff where it was just like so, so crazy. And yeah, I think, again, it's like, not, I get used to the everyday of it, but when I look at it and really think about it, it baffles me.
Yeah.
Like, really, really baffles me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was in the bathroom there just before we started this, washing my hands, and this woman was like, oh, you're Jennifer Barry. And I was like,
oh, really?
I was just like, but it's just so shocking when that happens in college, because you're like, no one should care about this. Like, why do they care? But then you remember, it's all for out of kindness, which is, you get used to it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, to short, to answer briefly, you get used to it, I think, but I'll never get over it, if that makes sense.
I think we've really narrowed down that you're a great person to like be a fan of. Like, people are listening and be like, she's my idol.
No,
we got this.
Oh my God, no. I do get cranky, so beware. No.
Yeah. Like, if you get her on a bad date, it's totally fine. She's good for, like, I'll the other 90%.
I'll still take her phone.
No, I'm joking. She won't give it back. And going back to the Young Offenders, I'm actually really interested. You got the role when you were 16. You were just, were you going to fifth year? Yeah, how did you combine the filming schedule as a secondary school student?
Yeah, so it was kind of a bit of an odd one. We started filming in August, and then we finished kind of end of September. So thankfully, mm-hmm. it was only the first month of fifth year.
Okay.
It was just really a case of if I was in school, I was in school, and if I wasn't, I wasn't. They knew why I wasn't there. Yeah. They knew I was filming this TV show, and, you know, that doesn't happen very often. Yeah. So they were very, very lenient and very helpful. And, you know, they would always, my teachers would always update me with what was happening and what was going on, and they would always make sure I was caught up. Basically, I lived at home for the first season, and I would get collected at, like, 5 o'clock every morning, and I wouldn't get dropped home till, like, 9 o'clock at night.
Oh,
so it was a long day. Yeah, it was a long day, and very, very tiring living up. But thankfully, for season 2 and 3, I lived up in Cork.
Brilliant.
With the others, and we were transported to and from set, so it was actually really a lot easier that way. But it was really hard to miss school, especially when you're in sixth year, because it started in, like, April mm-hmm. and didn't finish till, like, September, because we filmed 2 series back-to-back, which took a long time. And, like, I was filming during my leaving cert, so, like, on the days I had exams, I would either finish filming early or I wouldn't have filming. But, like, I remember there were times where I'd have to get dropped down to school for an exam or be picked up after a leaving cert exam for filming.
That's insane.
And the day of my debs, we were filming this one scene that just took really long to get. And I was so late for my own debs, but all the costume and the hair and makeup artists on set actually got me ready and helped me get ready.
Stop.
It was really nice. And they got me a taxi down and home and stuff. But I missed a lot of it. So it was just a case of, like, there was no balance, I would say. I think everyone thinks that you find a balance and you work your way through, but I don't think there was a balance for me. I think I wanted to act, so I was just like, I don't really care. Mm-hmm. At this stage, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to get it done.
And speaking of child actors, because I suppose during the time you would have been considered a minor at least, there tends to be an issue a lot in the film industry with people going to acting young and kind of being very affected by the coverage that comes after. Like, I think the Stranger Things cast would be a big example. Like, Millie Bobby Brown was literally, like, bullied off social media.
Yeah.
Is there anything you, kind of guidelines you wish were there that you'd either known of or things that have been put down, being like, okay, this is how much you're going to work today, like, this is your education?
Yeah, so in fairness to the Irish Equity Agreement in Ireland, you as a minor, you can only work certain hours. We did have tutors for fifth year on set. They were actually the school teachers from the school we were filming in who agreed to help us and do maths with us. So we actually did work with them.
That's so cool.
But then, yeah, there wasn't a lot of kind of emotional support, I would say. There was emotional support from the cast and the crew massively, but the bigger people on the job were not aware that we would need so much support, and we do need that support an awful lot. I think there should always be someone, and whether you're a child or not, whether you're an actor or not, I think there should always be someone for mental health on set.
Yeah.
I think there should be someone hired always that you can talk to and go through things with, because it's a really exhausting job. It's a really, like most things, but for this, you're on the ball all the time. You're surrounded by 60, 70 people the same every day. You can't get a break from each other. You know, you're processing this whole other person while trying to deal with your own personal issues. So I think it can all get really mixed up and muddled. And I don't think the supports were there at the time for that.
Yeah.
Especially as we were 18 when we filmed. So we were considered adults. So we were still in school, but we were considered adults. So we were allowed to work the full hours now and stuff. And that with the leaving cert and with my own personal issues, that was just an awful lot. And I wish there was someone there I could talk to. And I did ask them. Now, it probably just wasn't in the budget at the time for them to have someone come on and work with us. But I really think that should be a rule. I really think there should be. And I really think there should be media training given to everyone. Definitely for guidelines on social media of what to post, what not to post, what to talk about to the press, what to say in interviews. Because I didn't know that. And I used to talk to, like, and I'm not talking press, I'm talking, like, The Sun and The Mirror. Like, I would talk to them voluntarily, and that was the biggest mistake I could have made. Because they don't care. They don't care about you. They want a good story for their readers. Whereas there's a lot of great media, there's a lot of great media organisations in Ireland that really do care and really want to hear from you and tell your story, but there's also a lot of garbage, especially online, that can be really damaging for you and your image and your own personal sense of self. So I will never voluntarily talk to any of those again, because it's just something I've learned to not do.
there's this idea, it's called Arrested Development. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's the idea. Show. There is a show called Arrested Development, but for some specific reason, a lot of child actors, when they get famous mentally, they like get stuck in that age and they're very immature, and that can kind of lead to issues when they're older as well and how they interact with people. How did you manage to kind of keep that, I suppose, humble side, like juggling school? I mean, like, if any college student is listening to this, you're going to know like what it's like to juggle work, your leaving cert, which is massive, and like getting up at like 5 a.m, going home at night. How did you manage to maintain, like, I suppose, that sense of self?
Yeah, I think I definitely did have a little bit of Arrested Development after the first series. I really felt like I haven't aged until probably last year. Mm-hmm. Last year is when I really felt like I started to grow up and actually mature, mm-hmm. and think for myself. Whereas for the couple of years after Young Offenders came out, I was definitely stuck in other people's opinions about myself. Like, that's what it was in my head. That's how I saw myself, as other people's opinions. And that's a really horrible thing to go through.
And I suppose taking it back to social media now, as far as I'm aware, now I didn't have Instagram for a couple of years, so I did not follow you. I would have followed you if I had it.
Oh, God.
I know, I should have made an account solely to follow you. But you actually did, as far as I'm aware, have, I suppose, considerable following for a teenager.
Yeah.
Like, how did it feel suddenly having all of these eyes on your post?
Oh, so scary. So scary. I think especially because I was the kind of person that said everything and anything and didn't actually know the kind of etiquette.
Yeah.
And know the guidelines that I should have been following. I wasn't properly media trained. I think I kind of posted way too, I definitely overshared way too much on my social media, and I thought it was all for good. But there was a lot of trolls as well.
Yeah.
And eventually I just got to the point where I was like, I way more want people to follow me than I do to actually do my job.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew, I was like, I need to get out of this. I really need to get out of this. I had like 27,000 followers or something like that. And I was just like, I cannot do this anymore. Yeah. I didn't want to be an influencer. I personally, nothing against influencers, but I just hate the influencer culture.
Yeah.
And I was turning into one and I really hated that. So I just got rid of it for like a year and a half, and I had like a very, very private account. And then I kind of realised, it's a really sad thing to say because I wish it wasn't true, but sometimes when you're just at that stage of the career, you need to promote yourself as a product.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
As an actor, we are our own product. And people are nosy. People are nosier now than they ever were before. And they can find things out very, very easily. So I like to share what I think is appropriate for people who want to know about me and my career. Nothing else. Like, I will never share photographs of my boyfriend or my family members. Mm-hmm. I will never show photos of where I live. There's just certain things I will just, nights out, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, there's just things I won't post, because what benefit is that going to be for me, for my career,
yeah.
You know? So it's kind of like a business page almost, I would say it.
Yeah. Do you think that's a bit of a pity though, that like, if you were to have a night out or something you did want to share, well, unless you still have that, you know, very private Instagram, which would be handy, but you, I know social media should not be the normal experience for people, but you kind of don't get that normal, oh, I can just post.
Yeah, I definitely can't post anything. Does that bother me? No, because it means I'm not on it as much,
yeah.
I think. I'm not as addicted. I have a very addictive personality.
Yeah.
So social media for me is a big thing that I would be addicted to. I'm trying to battle it. Like, I am trying to work in it, but I would be constantly checking my phone and seeing what the crack was. No, it doesn't bother me too much. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it. I think that it can be really bad for yourself as an actor to constantly check social media, because you're constantly looking at what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
Whereas you have to remember that a lot of the time these people are just doing what you're doing and just trying to get jobs.
Yeah.
And trying to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't enjoy social media, but I think I'm at the stage where I just do have to have it for a little while.
Yeah.
Until the next big thing. And then I can delete it again. When I get my own publicist, I won't have to worry about publishing myself.
But that's actually really brilliant though, because you're so young and to come with like such a, I suppose, healthier stage with social media.
Mm.
Like, most people I know aren't at it. I'm not at it. Like, I didn't have social media for years and I was like, wow, I'm so amazing. And then I got it back and like a month ago and I realised, oh my God, I'm falling into the same habits I was when I was 15. But it's actually, I want to ask as well, you spoke about how you disliked kind of evolving into what you saw as an influencer. But I remember a few years ago, I was in secondary school. Once again, I didn't have Instagram, so I didn't know the situation. But one of my friends, she was texting me and she sent me a post of you. You were taking a picture in a mirror and she was basically telling me how she loved what you had put that up. because I think you were responding to someone who, a troll basically, and she was just talking about like how much it meant to her and how glad she was to see this and how gorgeous you looked.
Yeah.
And like, do you ever think?
Oh my God, thank you.
Yeah. I didn't realize kind of the context of the time. I didn't realize it was something that had actually been widely shared and like really kind of like acclaimed by people. But like, how did it feel suddenly kind of having this ability to kind of help people like that?
Yeah, that was such a big thing for me, and I think that's kind of that was what kind of almost the start of how I fell into that influential style of posting, is because so many people feel the same way I do, in the sense that they feel like they're not good enough, and especially with body image is such a problem,
so bad,
such a big thing, and it's talked about, yeah, but it's never addressed.
Oh yeah,
you can talk about something without addressing it, and it wasn't addressed. And when that person sent me that text, I was just so done. I was so finished with it all, and I just said, I'm going to post this. I don't care what people think. And then it got all that recognition, and suddenly I felt like I had a responsibility, which I do. I still think I do have that responsibility, but I can advocate for mental health and body image and safe and wellness, I suppose, in different ways. I kind of stopped that because I think it got to the stage where I was like, I'm trying to help all these other people without helping myself.
Yeah,
I wasn't helping myself. I was just trying to promote the wellness of others.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And I kind of had to just take a step back and be like, I'm not, this isn't for me anymore. Mm-hmm. This is me really trying to reach out to other people. Mm. And you have to be a little bit selfish, definitely, especially as an actor, and especially when you're in the public eye, you do have to be selfish, and you can say no to things. And I think I just had to say no to that at some stage, because it just got to the stage where I would have posted anything if it meant I got a message across, but I didn't realise the dangers that came with it and the risks that came with it.
Especially
when you're in the public eye with social media, you know? So, but tell your friend I said thank you, because that's a lovely thing. I do really appreciate that, and I wish I could go back into that, but I want to be an actor. I don't want to be a public speaker, and I don't think I'm in a place, I don't know enough about anything. Mm-hmm. I only know my own experience. So that's what I was trying to keep. I think that's what I was using to raise awareness for what I was trying to advocate. But your own experience can not be a good one either. Yeah. You know, I tried to take a bad thing and make it good, but it was still bad to me. And it was doing me no favours. So I stepped back, I think, a good bit from it then.
And it sounds like such an awkward place where it's like, wow, I have this responsibility and this, and it's great that I'm helping people, but it's so draining at the same time, because... Like I said this before the interview, but I was basically saying how you're so honest and open about things, and then for other people, if they talk about it again, it can just open a really painful part up for them. So it's amazing what you're doing, but at the same time, like, it's very hard what you're doing to kind of relive the trauma again, I suppose, that came from it.
Yeah, you worded that perfectly. There is a responsibility, as I said, and I do take role of that responsibility when I can, but that was just the wrong way, I think, to do it for someone who was still healing.
You're so young as well.
So young. So young. Like, even now I'm 22 and I'm still like, I literally am a baby. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know anything.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting, because there's so much to learn and so much more to experience. But for what I've gone through, I'm not professionally or personally in a situation now to advocate for those kind of things using social media. It's just not my place, I think, now.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because it's something that is still very touchy for me, and I think I just, because I went about it in such a kind of raw way, it's stuck with me a good bit that I did that. So it's not something I kind of, it's definitely not something I don't think I'd do again anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
But I still want to help, you know?
Yeah. And you've, like, I mentioned this to Jennifer as well, I've listened to a few of your interviews, but, no, you've done so much. And even though that part of your life, I suppose, is in the past now, you did help people. Like, you made a great difference. That girl, she never spoke to me about that kind of stuff. She'd never be the type of person to be like, oh, look at this influencer. But she did show me, you. She's talking about how much it meant to her. And it was really unique to me, because I'd never heard her speak about this before.
Yeah.
So it really did mean a massive amount to her.
Yeah, I think it did help people. And I'm really happy that it did help them. But there's other ways to help people as well. And I think it's important to remember that. And I'm not an influencer. You know, I don't believe in influencer culture. I believe in raising awareness and being an advocate. But I don't believe in influencing.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. I do feel like they're totally different things, even though when I just said it out loud there, it sounded quite similar
no,
to
no,
each other.
Definitely. Like, you can advocate for things without being the face of it, like, because exactly. like that wasn't your responsibility. Like, you did have a following, but it still wasn't your job to do that, and you should never feel like it was either, you know?
No, yeah exactly. And I think for now it's just I have social media to promote myself, mm-hmm. and that's fine. That's fine for now, until, as I said, I get my publicist. And
yeah, she's off the radar. Never
can,
to be seen.
Yeah, they can do it for me.
Speaking, I suppose, of body positivity and I just suppose body in general, do you feel like that's still a really persistent issue? And like,
oh my God, absolutely. Yeah. Especially in secondary school.
So bad.
Especially with younger people. It's honestly, I think social media is the worst thing that could have ever happened to us. And I think because there's so many terms thrown around nowadays, like, mental health can mean so much.
Mm-hmm.
And people self-diagnosing themselves with things on TikTok. And yeah. I think there's just so much happening now that the whole idea of body image and stuff has just been so warped and really messed up people. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really scary thing to talk about, but mm-hmm. it has to be addressed. Yeah, like, even myself, like, I've gained a lot of weight since Young Offenders mm-hmm. from the last time, because yeah. my body has changed. I was literally sick. I was looking back at season one to kind of prepare for this season, and like, I was like, oh my God, I was so skinny then. And then I think I got my period for like a year before that.
Yeah,
you know, like, I was still I was a child.
I know.
And yet I want to go back to that childlike body. That is so disgusting.
I know.
Why would I want to look like a child, you know? So now it's just a case of like, I think especially for women, I think men have an issue with their bodies,
yeah.
body image as well. But for women especially, we are so programmed to consistently think that we should look like a child version of ourselves.
Yeah.
Which is so disgusting.
It is.
It's so warped. Like, our bodies are incredible. Mm-hmm. What we can do, what we do with our bodies, like, the fact that it's just a vessel for our souls, if we want to get all spiritual about it. But that's literally what it is.
It
and
is.
As long as you're taking care of it, then it doesn't matter what you look like.
Yeah.
And don't be fooled into following the trends and the fashion trends and the makeup trends and eating this or eat this is my challenge or this is the treadmill challenge. Don't listen to it, because it is so, it's so warped. It falls into everything bad. It falls into everything bad that comes with social media. So as long as you yourself eat well, get outside, and don't listen to it, because mm-hmm. it is the biggest trap you will fall into. And I was stuck in it for so long. Thankfully now I'm out of it. And I know now that if I just take care of my body, get outside, go for a walk, come back, and that's fine. It's a real pity that this is the way it is now. But look, I suppose I don't think we're going to come out of it anytime soon. I know for a fact that when I do have children, they're going to stay so far away from any of that. Mm-hmm. As long as I can keep them away, I will, because mm-hmm. it's really an epidemic of self-hate.
It's horrible.
And self-loathing. I'll just never forget taking a photo of myself in the mirror, and you could literally just see my spine and like see my shoulder blades. And I remember at the time being like, I am so fat.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I am so fat. I need to lose weight. Whereas every single woman is different. No two are the same. No mm-hmm. two are the same. And that, yes, we all strive for the same goal.
Yeah.
Which is literally impossible.
It is literally impossible.
It's really, really bad for you. And it's really, really unhealthy. And like, I just suppose to anyone listening to this, to just remember that you cannot achieve the same physique as the next person.
No.
And all you can do for yourself is just take care of your body by eating well, getting some exercise in. You don't have to kill yourself in the gym. Just get outside and breathe fresh air whilst walking along.
Mm-hmm.
You will feel so much better about yourself. And dress the way that makes you feel comfortable. But don't be scared to hide yourself either.
Yeah.
I'm constantly, like, I used to, even now I still wear really oversized clothes and stuff to try to hide my body.
Yeah.
But sometimes I really embrace the fact that I have really wide hips,
mm-hmm.
quite thick legs. You know, my back is broader than most.
Mm-hmm.
But I love it. It's my body. I take care of myself. I do all these things to take care of myself. And if people don't like the way I look, that's more, it says more about them than it does me.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I'm just going to jump in here. Like, you were, like, objectively gorgeous. Like, everyone's seen a photo of her. Like,
Says you.
Yeah. Let's just agree together. We both look amazing.
We both look amazing.
Yeah, that's how
we
it is.
Fucking great.
Yeah, we do. It's actually really funny you mentioned that, like, trying to look a specific physique. Because I only just realized there, like, just now, people's idea of being skinny is having a 22-inch waist. Or, like, even though, like, their body, like, some people, like you said, sometimes you can be broader, you can have wider hips. You can be incredibly fit. You can eat, I don't know, very little or very healthy, but you will still never maintain that physique because it's just genes. Like, there's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do. Like, I remember being so confused as to why my clothes didn't fit me anymore. And it's only really this year I've realised, like, I am a woman now. I'm not a child.
Yeah.
I have a woman physique because I'm at the age of a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal physique is very different to the next woman's.
Yeah.
But it's because our body has been set up in a way for us to be able to nurture ourselves and to nurture children, should that be your choice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just baffling to me, the fact that I cried about having
wide
hips when I know I'm going to have the easiest birth of all time.
Yeah, the rest of us are just going to be... Or for the narrow-hipped woman, we're just going
to
be struggling.
Yeah, shout out to narrow-hipped people because, like, honestly...
We're not going to make it.
You guys are... fair pay to you, like, giving birth and all the C-sections and stuff. Like, you're heroes.
Or you don't have to give birth. It's completely up to you.
It's up to you. Yeah. Pro-choice.
Yeah, pro-choice. Do whatever you want.
Amazing. Yeah.
There's no room for happiness. Like,
there's like, you're like, we will never be satisfied the way we're going. We will never ever be able to embrace our current way.
No.
And that's a real pity. It's a real pity. One woman that I look up to so much and who is an incredible actor, she's actually been nominated for the first time this year, is Jamie Lee Curtis.
She's amazing, isn't she?
She is amazing. And there was, and Emma Thompson also, there was so much controversy surrounding how they were aging.
Yeah.
And they were like, why do they look like this? Why don't they look like they did 20 years ago? And you're like, they're literally in their 60s.
I know.
How do you expect them to look?
And they look gorgeous as well, like.
And by embracing their natural beauty, they have never looked better. And they are accepting that they don't have to look a specific way, that they embrace what they have and flaunt it. Yes. And it is incredible to see. And it just feels so refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
It's so refreshing to have that. And I hope that many people follow in their direction, because honestly, we need more people like them to lead the way for us.
And there's such a big gap in the media about how they speak about, like, men aging versus women aging. And especially, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but, like, the roles in Hollywood, it's like when you hit, like, 30 or 40, it's like you can only play, like, the mother or the wife. There's just no room for you anymore.
No.
Like, ageism is mad.
It's like Patrick Dempsey looks amazing in his ripped physique at 54 or whatever, and then it's like Jamie Lee Curtis looks exhausted as she goes shopping. Like, give us a break.
I know.
Like, what do you want us to do?
I don't know.
It's so frustrating, but that's, Hollywood is a totally different kettle of fish.
Speaking of the Young Offenders, so you finished series 3, you filmed it back to back, what year was it?
2019.
Yeah, so after series 3 ended, you just came out of The Young Offenders. Did you feel that your career kind of followed the trajectory of the way you wanted it to or you expected it to?
Oh my God, not at all. I really didn't. I really thought it would take off more. I was like, boom, I have an agent. I have, you know, I've got the publicity. I'm on top of the world. I'm not going to college. I'm going to just be an actor and do really well. But that's not how it works. And that definitely was a land for me. I will honestly say it. I really thought it was going to be like movies after movies after A24 and like Hulu series and all these things. And when that didn't happen, it was a real hit for me.
Yeah.
But now I understand that I'm actually right where I'm supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that had been the case, I would never have met you. I would never have worked here. I would never have gone to college. I would never have met my current boyfriend. I would never have met some of my best friends, you know? And I never would have got the opportunity to do like other courses and actually learn and talk to people. I would have just been on this path. And not that I'm saying I wouldn't have liked to been on that path, because at the time I'm sure I would. And at the time, it was really hard. And especially because my career after that was during a pandemic. when self-tapes became huge, and I was so not used to doing self-tapes, it was really challenging for me, and I'm only starting to get the hang of them now, like 3 years later.
I saw that wonderful one, I think you posted yesterday, of you struggling not to say certain words that I don't know I can mention.
Yes. Yeah. Trying to say fuck, basically. Yeah. I basically just kept saying the F word when I messed up. But that's the thing. People think that, like, when you're an actor, you just get one role and that's it. It's just consistently linear jobs. Yeah. But no one talks about the failures. So I suppose, if I'm advocating for anything at the moment, it's the fact that I do self-tapes all the time and I literally mess them up all the time. It didn't go the way I thought it would. But I'm really happy where I am now. Mm-hmm. And I think that all these experiences, especially as an actor, I learned this from Mario Rosenstock when I interviewed him, and I think it stuck with me. It's literally stuck with me every single day. Every day is an experience for you to gather more material as an actor and as a performer. You know, I'm so much more aware of my surroundings. I'm really looking and listening to people.
Yeah.
And I'm really seeing their behaviour. It's like watching a David Attenborough documentary, but in real life, you're picking up on everything. And that way, when the time comes that I do need to perform, I'll be so ready. Mm-hmm. I'll be so ready. So in the meantime, I'm enjoying myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not too stressed, especially as I'm only 22. I'm so young.
You are so young.
We're so young.
I feel like in my head that I think you're older, but it's just because I've known you like on screen since I was younger. I think the only comparable actors I can think to you is of the show Skins, where they were all like 16 or 15 when they started the show, and now I think they're like 30, but every single time, like, wow, they should be way older because they've been in my headline for years.
Yeah, they've been there for a while.
Yeah. And do you feel like around this time when you're kind of like, oh, this isn't going the way I wanted, did you feel like you had like a network of, say, kind of other creatives to join in this experience and be like, kind of give you advice or just even to talk to?
No, not at all. I went to quite a small secondary school, and I had a really close circle of friends who all went to college. And I was kind of left on my own, and I didn't realise that once a job finishes, you don't see those people again, really.
Yeah.
Unless you are really close to them and you make the effort. And I am really close to everyone on the Young Offenders. Like, we're really, really tight, but, like, we're all different ages, and we all had different things going on, and naturally you just kind of stop talking. And I think I was really alone in that. I felt like I almost had to do something else to feel connected.
Yeah.
But no, I was really lonely, and it was really difficult. It was really hard to feel, when you feel alone already, to feel like you're not succeeding is so much worse. It makes it feel so much worse because there's no one there around you that has the same situation, that's in the same boat.
Mm-hmm.
You're by yourself, struggling and lonely, which is horrible.
Recently, I think it was a month ago even, you announced you actually started up a new project called Kahoo, and it is kind of centred around trying to connect actors. You can explain it yourself, since I'd say you'd be able to say a lot more than me.
No, you pretty much worded it exactly. Yeah, I always had the idea for Kahoo because... So Kahoo means to nurture in Irish. It means the process of nurturing. And in Ireland, it's just really lonely. It's a really lonely industry unless you go to drama school, I think. Or unless you're kind of working with people from the very start. To be trying to become an actor and to be as a living actor, a lot of the time you're not working, and that's just the way it is. People are definitely blindsided by the fact that Hollywood is there and the Oscars are here, and, like, you know, for every one Hollywood actor, there's a million,
literally a million,
living actors working, trying to get that role that they got, striving for the awards and striving for the roles. And I think people forget that. So that's why it's like really, I just thought it was really, really important for other actors to feel like they weren't alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I started Kahoo. It was an excuse for me to make friends. My plan worked. No, it was a goal for people to feel less alone, and especially in the industry we're in, it's a lonely one.
Yeah. Especially in Ireland,
we're so isolated away. Yeah. Like, London's only a flight away, but if you live in London, you find your circle. If you decide to stay here, which at the moment I am, you're alone. Mm-hmm. You're alone. You don't have anyone close by with you. So it's really important to find those connections. And that's what it's for. It's to find the connections to help others, as well as yourself, to feel like you are not alone in what you do.
And was it your first meeting last week?
Yeah.
Can you tell us how it went?
Do you know what? It was so lovely. I actually had to reschedule it due to a family emergency. But
that's okay.
But I did reschedule it. And then yeah, it was just really nice. And we just talked about what we wanted to get from the group. And we just talked about life as an actor in general. Now, the next meeting is like this month, and I actually have no idea what we're going to talk about, because I'm like, well, we all know what we want, but how do we just like talk? And like, how do we, mm-hmm. how do we make friends? You know,
yeah.
it's, when you're put in a room and like, you're like, be friends with this person. It's like, well, that's not how it works. So I want to, it went really well. I think we're going to just get workshops up going, like wellness.
That's amazing.
You know, I want to try get some like group get togethers happening. I want to kind of try just encourage people to meet up and to become friends and to feel like they're all in that same boat, because mm-hmm. it was clear that we needed it from the meeting last week. It was really clear that we did need it. And I was just really proud of how it went. And, you know, it's my baby, and I'm just really proud of it. And I just hope it works,
mm-hmm.
especially for me, because yeah. I don't have any friends in the
industry. You're like, not for the others as much.
Oh yeah, never mind the others out there. It's just really my excuse to try and make friends.
Anyone who's like listening to this podcast and was there last week,
I knew it. But yeah, it was lovely.
I'm just going to jump in here real quickly that I have to say, when Jennifer first told me about this, I told her just what an amazing idea it was, because it's weird how something like this has not been implemented for all of these years. So I just want to like just say congratulations to you, and just fair dues to you for stepping up and doing what should have been done years ago.
Thank you once again,
doing it at 22 and just being so amazing, considerate to even think of it.
Well, not at all. The imposter syndrome is so real, I think, because I'm so young and I'm like, I have this idea. But like that, because it wasn't there before, is crazy.
What did they do? Like, I don't know. Like,
you go to drama school and then you stay in that circle of friends and then you die.
Oh, that's it, guys. If you go to drama school, it's over for you.
It's not over for you. You're the lucky one. But yeah, you're done then.
Oh, but I just think that's amazing. And anyway, I just want to speak about future projects. And I was going to ask Jennifer initially, oh, how did it feel shooting the end of The Young Offender season 3? But now I can't ask that anymore, because she has given us some news in the last week. Jennifer, if you want to let us know about that.
Yeah, I am delighted to say that The Young Offenders will be returning for a fourth series, even though we thought it was done and we really put it to bed. It's like digging someone up from a grave, trying to get Siobhan Walsh back. I'm like, get out of that box. Like, I need you back. Come on. I'm really happy. I'm really excited for what will come after as well. I think this is the little boost I needed. Yeah.
And you said you've been keeping this secret. Was it for 13 months, you said?
Yeah. Oh my God, it was the longest secret of my life. Usually I forget. See, I'm very bad with secrets anyway, because I just forget that they were told to me. So it's either like, you either forget or it's something that like I really can't say. Most of the time it's the forget. Now, for the things I can say, The Young Offenders was something I could have said. But I think it's because I was so excited mm-hmm. when I found out. First of all, I had COVID at the time and I was in isolation, and they rang me, Cormac Fox and Vico Films, and with Peter. They were like, do you want to do another series? I was like, yes, I do. But as well as that, it was me remembering that there's something there. There's something around the corner always. Yeah. You never know when it's going to happen. And even though you may feel like you're getting nowhere, these things do come along. And it was amazing, because after I found that out, I was cast in a play with Graffiti Theatre Company in Blackpool.
That's
who
amazing.
Do theatre for children. And it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. And I've met friends that I will have for life in that. And then, like, I was over in Greece working, because I was like, well, I'm not filming anything in the summer. I'm not busy. Like, I'm going to go to Greece. And I got a call to be like, we need you to come back, because we'd love to offer you the role of this woman, Katie, in Every 5 Miles. And so I did two things last year, which for a person who doesn't know, like, that's a lot in a year.
Oh, no, that's amazing.
For someone young and in college, that's a lot. So I was really happy. And then knowing I had this coming up was just so exciting. And then for it to be announced, finally, it's just pressure off my back. I mean, I don't know how many people I've told, like, drunk in the toilet of a pub, but...
Yeah, guys, now, if you go looking for Jennifer on the night out, this is what they wanted.
This is the secret I couldn't tell you, but I probably did, because I was drunk. But here we are.
I like drawing back to the, like, deep, dark secret thing, though, because you're just straight up there, like, yeah, I don't remember, like, any secrets ever. So, guys, like, this is your opportunity.
Yeah,
tell
if you
her.
Want a trauma dump, I can guarantee it, I won't remember. I do pity you, and I empathise with you, and I feel bad for your trauma, but I won't remember it.
You're such an active listener.
So don't worry about it. It's nothing on you. It's just purely that I am just a shite listener. And actually, I'm not a shite listener.
No, you're a great listener.
Back up a second. I am not a shite listener. I am a great listener, but I'm just a really bad rememberer. if that's a word.
Look, it's fine. What do we need memories for? Yeah, general, who knows even.
We'll all be ashes at the end of the day.
But why was it a 13-month period? Like, why was the long wait, actually? Was it COVID or...?
Writing the scripts.
Oh,
I
right.
I think that's why. I don't know why. I think it was just... I think BBC came to Fyco Films and were like, we want to do another series. And I think it was just a case of getting everyone together, getting a crew together. Hundreds of people go into one production, like, more than you could count. And I think it was just getting everything lined up for that and getting ready. And then there are some big changes. In this series, but I think it was just a case of getting it all together. And like, we've been moved to BBC One now instead of BBC Three,
really?
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely mental.
Oh my god, that's actually insane.
Like, mad. But yeah, I don't know why it took so long. I think these things just maybe they just take a while. I think as actors, we always get the auditions when we're ready to go, but because we were with this from the start, they wanted to let us know early, and then they wanted to make sure we were available to do it and give us the time to think about it, because it's a big thing to come back when you've been with the character for so long, and when you have such ownership of them, and we create the characters, it's really hard to let them go and to put them to bed. And it took me a long time to put Siobhan to bed, and now that I know now that she's coming back, for a long time I've been doing little things to just get myself in that kind of zone again.
Just catch you in a corner now, just doing something completely,
I'm constantly just like glaring at myself in the mirror, and I'm just like, you're a terrible person. No, I'm not. But you know, like...
Mental health advocate Jennifer Barry.
Hate yourself in the mirror. I think this is a time of preparation that we need, and I'm definitely underway with that. So trying to dig her up out of my deep-rooted memory is...
Okay, is there anything you can tell us about Siobhan the upcoming season, about maybe where she is or what she's up to?
I can't tell you what's obviously going to happen in terms of plot or anything like that. I think, I don't know, we left off in such a good place for Siobhan and Jock, and Siobhan and Linda, you know, it ended on a really nice note. I'd love to see her kind of grow up a little bit, and I'd like to see her maybe kind of ease away from that really kind of harsh, kind of rude, standoffish kind of attitude that she has. I really would like to see her kind of build softer connections with different people. I think she is so feisty though, and I think that's just her personality really. But deep down, there's definitely a softness that we haven't seen much of yet, only kind of in different bits throughout the series, especially when she was kind of pregnant and giving birth. I think that was definitely the most raw she's ever been. But I think I'd like to see a bit more of that. I don't know what's going to happen. I haven't seen anything, so I'm not sure yet. But yeah, I'd really like to see her kind of maybe soften her edges a little bit.
Proving interesting. But I'm sure it'll be fine on the day. And did you have a read through, actually? Because I saw a lot of you posted the scripts to your Instagram. Have you seen the whole gang yet?
I haven't seen them. I've been in touch with a few of them. Uh-huh. Just to talk about how excited we are to get back and stuff. Yeah. But we actually didn't know it was being announced this week or last week that we were coming back. So I woke up to Twitter and I just saw like all this stuff from BBC press office. And I was like, what is going on? I was like, wait a second. And then I saw the photo and I was like, oh, okay.
You're like, The Young Offenders season 4 is coming back.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, congratulations, guys. No, I actually just saved the photo from Twitter and just put it up.
No.
Yeah, guilty. I don't have the script yet. I will soon, I'm sure, but not for now.
Oh my God, that's actually mad. I thought that was like your own script for you.
Not yet.
No, she didn't.
Once the show is out, you can have a look at the scripts.
Oh, thank you.
Once it's aired.
I personally will get all the scripts of everyone and I will look at them.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. I'll do a podcast. So I'll
a
just
live
read
reading.
Script. Yeah.
Ooh, exciting.
Who's going to do the characters? Here, you just do Siobhan, I'll do the rest of them.
Yeah, you just do all of them and I won't have to worry about anything.
Yeah, we'll just let it flow. We'll see what happens on the day.
It'll be very natural, I'm sure.
It'll be very experimental. We're just going to push boundaries, but we will get to that later. Anyways, just I suppose before moving on to The Young Offenders, have you any other projects coming up?
Not as it stands. I really shouldn't have said that.
She's very in demand.
I'm an actor. I'm always in demand. I have loads of things lined up.
This is massive.
No, yeah, I have a big project this year, and after that, I hope that many more will come my way.
Yeah.
I'm always writing something. I'm working on something at the moment myself, writing. And that's my baby. And I do think it's going to go well. I think it'll go quite far. I can't say anything, but yeah, that's just something I wish I could like almost drop out of college and just focus on, because I think it's so like, maybe I'm just being biased here, but I actually think I'm hilarious. Like, no, I think it's good.
I can confirm that, guys. I spent some time with her. I've sussed it out.
Yeah, I think it's good. Think it's good. But we'll have to see. But that's kind of like my next, I think that's what I want my big thing to be soon.
Actually, mentioning the college and work-life balance, how do you feel about being in college and wanting to commit to acting at the same time?
It is hard. It's difficult. It's difficult to feel like you're trapped in an education system. I'm really lucky that I am on Quirkus. I'm a Quirkus scholar. So when the opportunities for me to act do come, they're very supportive of it. But all in all, I know I just need to have a degree. Do you know? Yeah. Everyone says do it. It's in the back pocket. You have it then. And I'm very privileged that I'm able to go to college. So I'm not going to try abuse that too much. Yeah. And I think at this stage, I really don't care what I get, as long as I walk out of here with a piece of paper in my hand that is not a expulsion letter.
I don't know what you're going to pull off the next like year or two to get like expelled from UCC, but if you like go for
you never know. Yeah. I have a couple of tricks up my sleeve I haven't played yet. Okay. No, but I think, yeah, I don't really care as long as I just graduate. Yeah. And then I can just do what I want and no one can tell me that I didn't do this. Just to be like, I did this.
Yeah, no, fair play.
Look at me.
Especially like when you have, like, I know you mentioned earlier coming out of the Own Offenders that like you didn't really feel things went the way you want. But at the same time, you were still a household name in Ireland. Like you, the fact that you actually decided, okay, I'm going to get the degree, compared to me, like I could go off to another country and try out all these things. That is amazing. That's something you'll probably carry with you, I'd say, for a really long time.
Yeah, I think I do, like, again, what gives me the right to not do what others do? You know, what gives me the right to say I'm better than these people? Nothing. Like, now, that being said, college is really hard for me and I really struggle with it. And there's many a time I've come close to dropping out and wanted to drop out. Yep. But for now, it's just really a case of getting it done and just making the most of it. And like, you never know. Like, I won't see a lot of these people again. And I think while I'm with them, it's really important to have a lot of fun with them and just enjoy my time. And it's also a nice reason to not be working.
Yeah.
You know, I always want to work, but if the work isn't coming in, I have something else to focus on, which is very, very important for an actor anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just really.
I suppose I'll finish up quickly because I have, oh my God, I've kept Jennifer here for such a long time.
What time are you on?
It's like an hour and 16.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
You're going to have so shit crack editing this.
Oh no. I'm actually going to put the whole thing raw. This is Jennifer very raw and unfiltered.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'll be like, I'll do that again.
Yeah. So I suppose the last thing I wanted to ask you, it relates a bit back to advocacy, and you have been so open about mental health issues in the past few years. I think you've been more open and honest than any other actor in the Irish industry that I've ever seen, even people I've known. And I was wondering, could you just kind of recount what led you to becoming that kind of advocate? Just the whole story about how you got into that.
Yeah, I suppose I just struggled myself. I went through a period of my life where I was very unwell, and I think I just never wanted anyone else to go through that. But at the same time, because there was so much pressure on me, I think I wanted, I used it as a way to be like, help, you know, like, I'm not, like, why are you giving me all this responsibility and these pressures when look at me, look at what's happening to me, look at what I'm going through. And it wasn't like a pick me kind of thing. It was very much more a help me kind of thing.
Yeah.
But then you have to remember, you're not going to get the help from the press, and you're not going to get the help from your fans. You're going to get help professionally and by talking to people you trust. Mm-hmm. And even though I was sharing all this, I wasn't, like, I didn't trust the people I was sharing this with. I was just sharing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was really sick when I was in sixth year. I was diagnosed with depression. And I think it's something, I think I'm definitely, that's behind me.
Yeah.
But I am still very aware that it's not a linear process.
Yeah.
It's taken a long time to get to where I am now. And like I said, I was still in that kind of childlike state of mind for a while after Young Offenders. And I think that really stalled my healing a little bit. But now that I'm older and I'm myself, that has given me the chance to be healed and to continue healing and learning and growing. I suppose I just, in a way, it was I didn't want anyone else to feel the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it was also like a, look at me, I'm having this major freak out. Like, I need help. I want your help. I need to talk about this because I need the world to know that I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah, upon reflection, not the best way to go about it. Definitely not. But it was the way it happened.
Yeah.
And I'm really lucky that I'm in a position now where I can say that I'm
mm-hmm.
a lot better. And that was definitely something that's in my past. And it's not something I'm scared to talk about either.
Yeah, I was about to say, you speak about it so casually, like, which is amazing to see. Even, I suppose, I don't want to be like, oh, the taboos around mental health and stuff, but, you know, some people are just, they don't like talking about it because they're embarrassed, or some people obviously find it something very dark to deal with. They don't want to talk about such a dark subject. But you just talk about it so casually, like, which I think, I actually find it to be really reflective of people who've had, like, mental health issues. Once they've kind of overcome them, they always like joke about them, or just they are like, oh yeah, that just happened to me, and you're like, wow.
Yeah, I think it just shows how serious it is when people are able to joke about it. And it's either you joke about it or you don't talk about it, and the fact that people don't talk about it means just shows how serious it was. And the people who do joke about it, it just shows how badly it affected them. Not affected them, but like how bad it was for them also, that now they're making jokes about something that was so traumatic.
Yeah.
Genuinely so harmful for them. Yeah, I don't know. I just talk about it casually because I don't think there's any point in tiptoeing around it. And I don't think talking about it so seriously is beneficial either.
Yeah.
I think everyone in this world needs laughter. And I think by using something so bad for the power of good.
Yeah.
Is a really, really important thing. And there's not a lot of people that do that, so I'm happy that that's the way I approach it, I suppose.
And just when you were first diagnosed, or you first kind of feeling those feelings, was there ever any part of you that ever thought like, oh, I'm on like this really big TV show, I have loads of people following me, I shouldn't be allowed to feel like this, like other people have it worse. Like, did you ever try to dismiss it or...
Yeah, I definitely ignored it. I don't know what I say, I dismissed it, because once I realised what it was, it wasn't ignored or dismissed by me. But definitely when I kind of had those feelings before there was a proper diagnosis, I think I definitely was like, shut up. Just shut up, you should be so grateful.
Yeah.
Look at where you are. And like, that definitely didn't help either. And definitely because I was seen as this comedy actor and this character in school, very much a class clown. Not that I was funny, but I was a class clown, you know. I thought I was God's gift to comedy, whatever. But yeah, I felt like I almost had pressure on me to constantly be this clown.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the only time I was a clown is when I didn't speak about it, to be honest.
Wow, guys, we just got some like full circle.
Oh my god. No, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's just the truth, I think.
And it's kind of mad, like, this is a very strange connection to make, but between acting, I suppose, professionally, but you feeling like you had to act in a way where you were pretending to be this, or trying to act very bubbly and bright, not let anyone know what was happening. And I have no idea what you're feeling on the inside at the time, but I assume it was a completely different person to what you were showing. Like,
yeah, absolutely. Like, I look back at photographs of myself, and I recognize the outside of myself, but I look at myself and I'm like, I don't even know who that was. Like, I genuinely don't recognize that person. And I can almost see it in my eyes when I look at photographs from then. I just look close to death in a way, not physically, but like, I was really, really close to the end, I think.
Oh my God.
Which is so weird to look at. But I'm really grateful that I can look back and actually see that now and look at it from a bright side.
I know.
And feel empathetic towards myself as well. Yeah. I do a lot of the time. I used to cry so much because I was like, why did this happen to me? When I was kind of healing.
I know.
Which is all part of it. You know, you question why. And
it
was just a huge part of it was questioning why that happened to me and just really feeling just this pain for my younger self. But yeah, it's just something that happened, and I can't change that, and it's definitely helped me become the person I am today.
Yeah.
And just, I appreciate the good a lot more than I used to.
And do you ever, like,
think of the person you might have become if it hadn't happened to you? Do you ever wonder, like, if I didn't have to go through this? Like, you've grown. I honestly seem to think that when people do go through something like that, they mature and they become so self-aware and insightful, much more than the average person.
Yeah.
But do you ever look back and think, like, I wonder what that girl would have been like if that hadn't happened to her?
Yeah, I think I definitely wouldn't have followed through with my dreams if that didn't happen. I don't think I would have realised how lucky we are to have this one opportunity to actually do what we want. I think I would have ended up giving up acting, and I probably would have pursued a normal career in college. I call it a normal career, but like it is. Yeah, I would have probably followed through with something stereotypical because I wouldn't have been as aware as to how lucky we are to be living the life we are, if that makes sense.
And just have the ability to like do anything.
Just have the chance, like. I think we're all in a bubble at the moment. I definitely think I'm outside that bubble.
Yeah.
A little bit, just because of
past experiences,
yeah. Which is something I'm very grateful for.
I know. It's kind of like a freedom. It's almost like, because you know, actually, this is, I can do anything I want because what's going to stop me?
Yeah, that's I'm free. I'm free now from the burden of expectations. Mm-hmm. And that is a lovely thing.
What advice would you have to anyone who's dealing with something? I feel like you must be asked this question. I feel like anyone who's had to deal with something like this is just like, what are your tips? How did you get over it? Is there anything very quickly you'd recommend to others that helped you?
In terms of my mental health?
Yeah.
I say this all the time, but like, and everyone says to talk, but like, the more you don't talk, the worse it gets. If you have a broken leg and you walk around on that broken leg, it's not going to heal. It's only going to get worse and potentially infected.
Oh, wow. We're really going into the details today.
It's my medical background, my family. You know, it's hard coming from a medical background.
It's so hard being that, like, smart and talented as well. I actually have to say that was a really good analogy. I was going to be like, peak English right there.
Yeah, but you know, it is true. Like, if you walk around with a broken leg, it's going to get worse. It's not going to heal. And it's the same thing if you don't talk when you feel that way. And I think there's a difference between feeling shit and genuinely being somewhere bad. And I think if you feel bad, again, it's just as important to talk. It's also really important to stay away from your phone.
Oh, yeah.
Huge bit of advice I would give. Stay away from your phone. Get outside as much as possible. Listen to music. These are all kind of general things. I think just mainly is just talking.
Yeah.
And just talk to people that are professionals and will be able to help you. And talk to people that you know will support you. Because it's very, you feel alone. You feel really alone. Yeah. And the amount of people I pushed away was crazy. But as soon as I opened up, they were there all along and I just didn't see it, you know? So, yeah, I think just by taking the best care of yourself physically will help you mentally. But at the end of the day, sometimes you just need that extra help. And there's no shame in that at all.
It's actually so mad that, like, that's the time you felt you were the most alone. But I suppose if anyone came near you, you would try to push them away at the same time. Like, it's such
a... Yeah, it's a really toxic thing. You're at war with yourself, honestly. Mm-hmm. You're, like I said, they'll try to come help me and I push them away, even though I was alone. It was like... And maybe that's why I kind of used the press and used social media as being, like, a help me.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, it's okay not to be okay, I feel this way. But really, it was like a help me. I'm not talking to anyone about this. And this is my way of saying I need help without actually saying I need help.
That's insane.
Which is, I really only made that realization during this podcast, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, don't do what I did and do the other thing that I said to do, which is talking.
Me to like my 100 followers, guys. It's okay not to be okay. But yeah, no, that's actually mad. Like, honestly, I could talk to you for hours about this, but I won't because I've already kept you for, I'd say, an hour and a half. I'm actually scared to look at the thing. And just for a fun last lighthearted question that I've wrote in here and I didn't ask, oh my god, what actor or director would you like to work with?
I love these questions.
If you ever had anyone.
Oh my god. Okay, I have three actors that I'd die if I got to work with them. Olivia Colman, Florence Pugh, and Miriam Margolyes. She's done a documentary recently where she travels the world and like learns about different cultures and stuff and learns about living in Australia because she actually is an Australian citizen now. But I think if I have the humour of Miriam Margolyes, the determination of Florence Pugh, the kindness of Olivia Colman and all their talent, I think that's like my dream morph.
Well, now to be fair, that is like the combination of those two talents is kind of like unstoppable.
Iconic.
Yeah.
Iconic. And yeah, I think I'd love to work with those three. If there's any male actors I'm trying to think of, I think Colin Farrell is like, you have to kind of, I'm sure you always have to mention them in, you know. I think Colin Farrell's amazing. I have a t-shirt signed by him from when I was 9 in my room.
Oh my God, that's so cool.
Very, very cool. And who else? Will Poulter, he's amazing. He's really talented. Yeah, just some of those people I think are just so amazing. But those three women, especially for me, I just think it would be a dream to work with them. I think I would be content for the rest of my life. Mm. I don't think I'd ever need anything else.
I still see it happening. I probably shouldn't say this in case it comes back in 10 years, but I know I could see it. Because I've just been doing the podcast for the first few weeks and I come into the station and you see Jennifer is always working at acting. She always talks about it. She's so talented. Like, this is, I suppose, probably almost my closing note for this episode, but Jennifer is just such a talented, wonderful person. If you ever meet her, you're going to be very lucky, but she's going to go really far. And I am super grateful for having you on today.
Oh, thank you. That was so nice. Like, you I feel like it's going to turn into a compliment competition now, because you were so kind. And I cannot thank you enough for having me on. It's like such an honor to remember what I want to do. And you're definitely a reason to remind me of why I want to do it.
That
to meet people like you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I honestly feel this is where my interview peaks. I don't think anyone after will be isn't. Paul Mescal.
You met
never.
Paul Mescal.
Yeah, he could never. He's nothing compared to Jennifer Barry.
I texted him before.
Oh,
okay, I make this sound like I was like flirting with him. I actually wasn't. What I was doing was I just congratulated him on normal people and he said thank you.
Oh my God.
But I mean, I basically was texting him, I suppose.
Jennifer Barry and Paul Mescal in a secret relationship? Before Phoebe Bridgers, what's going on?
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
The Daily Mail will be here tomorrow and be like,
oh my God.
This was said in a podcast. We can't specify anything like that, but it
wasn't true.
An inner source.
Yeah, an inner source that wasn't true from a joke.
Yeah, this is not, I might just edit this out. Never mind. But like being around Jennifer, it's really like, she just like knows all these like really like cool people and I'm just there like fangirling. She's like, okay Shannon, that's kind of weird, like please stop.
I fangirl too,
yeah.
Massively.
Yeah, it was such a privilege to have Jennifer today. She's such a wonderful, lovely, amazing woman and she's so talented. I can't wait to see her in The Young Offenders season 4. I would definitely recommend checking out anything she's done, including It's 5 miles.
Every 5 miles.
Yeah. Because I know the 5 miles, but I keep mixing up. I keep thinking.
Yeah, people keep calling it five miles. And I'm like,
I keep calling it 5 miles apart because there's this film with like these two people who had like, he had to be like 5 feet apart from her.
Oh, yes. Yeah, with Cole Sprouse.
Yeah, that's what I keep thinking in my head. Like,
what's that called again?
It is 5 feet
it's
apart.
It's 5 feet apart. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so it is similar to Every 5 miles.
Yeah, 5 miles
a
is kind
very
of
different story.
Like, what does that mean?
Human trafficking, fictional illness. Yeah, okay, I can see it.
But like, the 5 miles apart, like, what? Like, what are you staying apart from for 5 miles? Like, is this like a really serious disease? Like, what is. What is actually this plot?
I know it's a book.
Oh, yeah.
It's a book. Amanda Steinberg?
Yeah.
Is that who the actor is? Yeah. She's amazing, actually.
Yeah, she's the best.
But yeah.
But yeah, I didn't go into that today, and I really wish I did, because it was just nominated at the Royal Television Society yesterday.
Yeah,
before we close off, is there anything you want to say about that nomination or just working with that cast?
The best group of people ever, and we are still all in contact and we're all planning a night out soon to celebrate the nomination, but to also celebrate Danielle, who played the incredible lead and who has been nominated for an IFTA. And I literally just texted her to say congratulations there. Mm-hmm. And I also told her to follow me back on Instagram because she didn't. Rude, Danielle, if you're listening. Rude. Yeah. But yeah, I'm just really proud of what we created, and I really do believe this is only the beginning for that story. I think there's a whole bag or box to unload with that. Mm-hmm. And it's a very, very important topic. And Sinead is my favourite person in the world. Mm-hmm. I think she's absolutely incredible. And I'm so lucky to have worked with her already. And I really, really can't wait to work with her again in the future. Mm-hmm. Sinead, if you're listening to this, hire me, please.
She's just writing a script and you're like, I can see that. When I saw the film, I just remember at the end, and I was saying, like, I think it's like modern day slavery is basically the title of the film. Like, it's 5 miles like near you at all times, and that for me was just like, okay, like, what, I never, I don't know, sometimes I feel very, like, I'm so uninformed about things. I just, like, never thought that would be true, and it is.
It's something that's just swept under the rug.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, no matter where you are, within your 5 mile radius, there is some sort of human trafficking happening.
That is so messed up.
Even in Ireland.
That is.
Especially in Ireland.
Yeah.
It just shows we're not the perfect country, no. And we've a lot to do, but just remember to keep an eye out for that, and there are numbers and resources available online, especially through the RTE website, if you go to Every 5 Miles on the player, that you can contact if you do think you see some sort of human trafficking happening in your area. So,
and just a quick note just for this episode, there'll be a couple of numbers on the Instagram just regarding some of the subjects we've talked about in this episode. This will be one of them, but there will be a few others just in case you might want to ring up someone. And also, go see Lakelands on May the 5th, because we've mentioned Daniel Galligan.
Yeah.
And the directors are amazing. Yeah. Like, I've corresponded them once, and I think they're going to come on soon, but they're, like, the nicest guys ever.
Oh, so, my God.
Yeah.
That's so, yeah. What an incredible film. And Aina Hardwick as well. What
yeah,
a
Aina
talent.
He is amazing.
Really nice guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There just she goes again.
Oh,
name
my
dropping.
God. It's not a name drop if you
we're
know them.
Friends.
No, we're acquaintances. Like, yep. I would like to say we're friends, but I think if he was asked, he'd be like, I just know her.
That's okay.
But maybe next year.
Maybe we'll get him down to the studio. And
maybe
then
we get him in.
Started bonding. It's giving like Kahoo all over again. Put it
that's how
in
I
room.
Become best friends with yeah, no. If the nominee.
If the nominee. If the other guys, Oscars don't mean anything. It's actually really funny. I said I was going to do an Oscar predictions episode, but the Oscars are this Sunday, aren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. So no Oscar predictions episode. We're doing Jennifer Barry.
Are they Sunday or Tuesday? They're on the 14th.
Are they on the 14th?
I feel like they're on Tuesday because Paddy's is the Friday. Anyway,
that's
really
besides the point.
Matter.
There is no Oscar predictions episode because I have Jennifer Barry on, and that's way better. So just please calm down.
Wow.
The one person who was asking for this episode.
You have really low standards. Oscar prediction, Jennifer Barry, you chose me.
Jennifer
wow.
Barry, yeah. Like, am I seeing any Oscar nominees in the studio?
Not
am I
yet.
Seeing any Oscar statues?
Not yet.
No, exactly. Like, when, yeah, when that happens, when we have Jennifer come back here with her Oscar, then we can talk about Oscar nominations. But till now, they don't really matter. We don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just to make that clear to anyone listening, we don't care about the Oscars, and don't listen to anything I said last week. But yeah, I will try ending it for this time. Jennifer's just too fun to talk to. But once again, yeah, Jennifer Barry, generally just such, you've listened to her, she's such a wonderful, kind, considerate person, so talented and hardworking and humble, and I can't wait to see where she goes in the future. I'm just going to treasure, I suppose, this interview for a really long time. This is something I'm very proud that I've done and gotten to be part of. And I suppose, Jennifer, if you've got any parting words, you can drop them here.
Just thank you for taking the time to listen and to ask such interesting questions. It's definitely the most fun interview I've ever had.
Oh,
and it's definitely one of my favourites. And I think I'll treasure it too. In fact, I know I'll treasure it too, yeah. Because it was a very special one.
Yeah, Jennifer and I are just really amazing. Like, we can't help it. Like,
it's hard.
It's hard, but we will try to tone it down for you a bit, or just amazingness. So, yeah. Okay, guys, so that's everything. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. Next week, I will be talking about the Oscars, even though I just said that I don't care about the Oscars and they mean nothing to me. And they will mean nothing to me if the people that I want to win don't win. But we'll cross that next week. Also, next week, we'll be talking a bit about film scores, since I absolutely love film scores. They make up, I'd say, 50% of my Spotify playlist. And I'll be doing that with a friend who also loves music too and is very talented. So I can't wait to have her on it. Anyone who's going to the accounting and finance ball tonight, I hope you guys really enjoy it too. Everyone should be there. And if you're not there, I will miss you. I'll be very sad that you're not there. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy the rest of your week. Thank you so much for tuning in, and I'll see you again soon. Bye.